Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with Sky Sports and NFL UK. We're sponsored by DraftKings, your one-day home of fantasy football. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my partner, Jeff Reinbold. Jeff, I made it back from San Francisco, but our recording equipment didn't. So we're recording this on our telephones at the moment. It's we've done it all sorts of different ways, but we are going to get the podcast out as best we can because the people want to talk about Super Bowl 50. It was the first in 22 years without a touchdown pass, but Denver wins the game 24-10 against the Carolina Panthers. First of all, did you have a good trip out of San Fran? You get back home all right?
Got back fine, and it's a snowy Hamilton, Ontario, Canada I'm in right now. So I like the weather in San Francisco a little better.
Yes, it was a good week of weather, actually. So let's, I guess the best way, Jeff, is I don't want to necessarily go through every play or every, you know, every key moment, but just, we may be a little bit scattergun with this, but just, you know, the things that are kind of sticking in our memory. Now we've had a chance to dissect the game a little bit more. We've watched the fallout and, you know, we both probably got to see Cam Newton's press conference. We can talk about some of that stuff. But maybe we start with Denver's defense. I mean, Denver's offense had 194 total yards, 11 first downs. They were 1 of 14 on third down. But they turned in a defensive performance for the ages, didn't they?
They certainly did, and I think, you know, that defensive performance, I said it to Sean during the broadcast, and I thought that was up there with the 85 Bears performance because they just really just manhandled Carolina. And when you sack the quarterback seven times, and especially when you sack a quarterback like Cam Newton has such ability to get out of the pocket and get away from you, that's a dominant performance up front. And it was just as dominant in the back end because you said – when we were talking during the game, I said, Neil, what's it like down there? And you said, they just can't get any separation. The receivers just can't get away from Tlaib and that crew.
Yeah, well, for me, you know, it started up, obviously Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware get a lot of attention, but it started with the big guys in the middle, whether it was Sylvester Williams, Malik Jackson, Derek Wolf. The Carolina's inability to run on first down and on those, you know, this was one of the best running attacks in the NFL. That kind of hurt them. It put them in those passing situations. And yeah, Cam was under pressure, but he sailed a few passes high. And, you know, you could just see it time and time again. His receivers, that term winning on the outside, they weren't winning on the outside. So I guess it was all the levels that you want to look at on a defensive performance. The Broncos ticked every box.
Yeah, and in the coaching aspect, when you look at the game, and I've gone back and watched the game now again two times, and Neil, the thing that I noticed was that on first down, in any rundown situation, that Wade left his 3-4 personnel on the field. He played with the nose, two ends, and then his two outside backers, two inside backers. So regardless of the personnel group that Carolina put on the field, they were always plus one in the run game, which means that they had somebody to defend the quarterback in that zone read run system that Carolina loves to use. And they would press the receivers on the outside, and those receivers couldn't win in the one-on-ones when Carolina tried to throw it. And when they tried to run it, there was always an extra guy there that could handle the quarterback, and it was making Cam's reads really tough. He kept getting what we call give reads, and, you know, the give would be right there. He'd have a defender to play the give and a defender to play him. So, you know, it really was not – it was a well-designed job by Wade, obviously, but Mike Shula just really struggled to come to grips with some other way to get the offense moving.
Yeah, we talked about that on the bus podcast that we did straight afterwards, which, Jeff, we were officially the first NFL podcast to get out there after the Super Bowl. Did you know that?
We are not only the first, we are the best, Neil.
There you go. It's not just about being first. It's about the quality that goes with it. But we talked about Mike Shula a little bit and the game plan that that Carolina had. And of course, you go in with a plan and then you adjust that plan. And they didn't look like they did that. And it was a funny old day for the coaches on Carolina's staff, because I thought at the time Ron Rivera used up his last challenge on a play that was amounted to 7 yards in favor of the Panthers. Now, he didn't need to use any other challenges, but you could question giving up your final challenge of the game in the second quarter over 7 yards. So there was just some funny bits there in terms of the coaches for the Panthers.
Yeah, they just didn't appear they were, in sync in any one phase at all. I mean, the kicking game, the big punt return Norwood gets, Carolina's got a man down there. The gunner beats his guys right down there and apparently thought that Norwood had made a fair catch signal. I watched on tape. Norwood never raised his hand above his shoulder pad, so it was just a really questionable play by the Carolina guy because he's there to, and then actually bumps him and takes and lets him go, and then Norwood takes off and goes for the longest punt return in Super Bowl history. So it just you look at every single aspect, and you just say they just didn't play well. They weren't, I won't say they weren't prepared because I think that's too strong a statement, but mentally they just weren't in sync, and they couldn't overcome it. The times that Cam had free receivers, he missed them. They made a couple plays. Again, got a couple balls early in the second half, and I thought, okay, now they're going to start to, start to open it up, and you're going to, get some plays. And then it just, same thing, Denver just shut them down.
You always look at, when you leave stuff on the field as a team. I thought Carolina had just too many mistakes, Jeff, and that's not to take away from Denver. Denver did their job. They won the Super Bowl. Absolutely, credit goes to them. But Carolina, they had too many penalties. Turnovers, we always say, are key, where they get magnified in the Super Bowl. They had too many of those. They missed a field goal, which led to a short field for Denver to get points. And really, if Denver don't have those kind of short fields, Von Miller, two fumbles led to Denver touchdowns, then this game is, this game is going a different way. But Carolina, just too many mistakes.
No question, Neil. And 12 penalties. 12 penalties in an NFL football game, that's three games worth of penalties in one game. That tells me that you're not mentally ready to play, that you're not emotionally ready to play. You're either playing outside your emotions, which means you're not controlling your emotions, or you're just not in the game. A lot of those were unforced errors too, jumping off sides, those kinds of things. I understand the pressure of big games, been in championship games. I know how that works, but I will tell you this, it's the same on both sides, and you make a great point. We talked before the game, if Denver could get short fields and if they could get turnovers, they could win the game because, you knew they weren't going to drive. They drove the ball one time in the game, and it was the opening drive of the game, and they kicked the field goal. When you start drives at the 4 and the 14, which is where they started two drives against Carolina, I don't care how good. And Carolina's defense, let's make this point too. Carolina's defense played their ass off. I mean, they played
absolutely
really good football. You get the ball at the 4-yard line and force a team to kick a field goal. That's playing unbelievable defense. That's gotten lost in this whole thing just because there was so much focus on Cam and so much focus on the highest scoring offense and all of that stuff. But when it came down to it, it was the defenses that decided the day.
Yeah, the Denver Broncos fans have been hitting me up on Twitter talking about Peyton Manning. I mean, he started off very well, Jeff. It looked like he was going to have a really good game, and then, well, he didn't. And, a few fans have reminded me that I suggested Peyton should be benched. Actually what I said was he should be benched or they need to play lights-out defense. Well, they played the lights-out defense. And, let's make no mistake here. Peyton's won that Super Bowl, and credit to him, but he was along for the ride, Jeff, on Sunday night.
Yeah, there's no question about that. He did his part, and his part was just don't turn it over. Don't make mistakes. Now, he did fumble it, and he did throw an interception, so he got away with two. And normally when you turn the ball over twice and you have less than 200 yards of offense in a game, that's not going to be good enough to win a championship game, and certainly not win a championship game by 14 points. So when all the indicators tell you that it was just a phenomenal job by that defense, the thing that's, when you look at Denver's offense, where they did get enough production was, and again, this is one of the things we talked about before the game, they've got to be able to run the ball a little bit. Well, Anderson has 80 yards, I think, on 10 carries or something like that, which is enough, right? It wasn't like they just got shut down like they got shut down by New England. So they could run the ball just a little bit to keep clock going when you're playing from ahead. They kept the clock going. I thought he did a masterful job from 6 minutes till the end of the game of managing the clock. Every time that they were on offense and the clock was moving, the play clock was moving, he snapped the ball at 2 seconds left on the play clock. Their special teams went out there to punt late in the game. All right, so normally you just go out, line up, and punt the ball. Nope, they went out and froze the punt. They held it. The guy, so the center put his head up, and he looked at the play clock, and they snapped the ball with 4 seconds left on the play clock. All the little things that Carolina didn't do, Denver did do. So all those special little things that a lot of them never show up in the stat sheet.
Okay, Jeff, we're going to take some questions out of the mailbag as we go through the podcast. I've got one here from Daniel Brooks who says, is the failure of the referees to overturn the first quarter challenge the biggest play not being talked about? So this is the Jericho Cotchery incompletion. I actually was on the sidelines, as you know, and I said I thought it was a catch at the time, and I thought this play was going to be overturned. They said there was just enough movement of the football for it to remain incomplete. A couple of plays later, same drive, Cam fumbles from the Von Miller sack, and Malik Jackson has the first touchdown of Super Bowl 50. So it was a big play, wasn't it, that maybe as we went through the afternoon and into the evening might have been forgotten, but it was certainly big in that early start because, of course, Denver got off to a fast start, which is what they needed against Carolina.
Yeah, The when the play got was not overturned, when the officials said it was not a catch, think about the field position that they lost in that situation. That was critical field position, because now the ball comes back, and then when the strip sack occurs, you know, they're there to pick up the ball, right? And score the touchdown. The entire possession changes when you get the ball out to, I think it was about the 45-yard line. And now again, Carolina's playbook is opened. They can get to a lot of different things. It's tougher to play when you've got your back up against the goal line. All that being said, the reality of it is, and Neil, that's one of that catch thing is one of the things that I'm sure the competition committee is going to have to look at in the offseason. But I looked at every angle that we had in the booth, and I would have said, I would have agreed with you. I think that's a catch. But apparently, and I just listened to, on the network, they have everybody mic'd, and I just listened to the official explain it to Rivera, and he said that the ball was moving. And he said, and Rivera said, but he had his hand under the ball. And the official said, but the ball was moving. So that's, you know, that apparently was the reason that they justified the call.
Here's a question from Paul Ramsey, and it's one that we can answer from opposite ends of where we were positioned. You were up in the top of the stadium, but you had the windows open in your studio, so I could see you hanging out the window watching the game while it was going on. I could see you from my vantage point down on the sidelines, Jeff, where I was 6 feet away from the field one side and 6 feet from the Denver Broncos fans the other side. And I say Broncos fans because from where I was, it was tough to spot Carolina Panthers jerseys. It was a sea of orange. So I have this question from Paul Ramsey, who says, how much of a factor were Denver Broncos fans inside Levi's Stadium? You go first, but I think they were huge.
I tell you what, at one point, and it was at that one point, that critical point, when Cam got sacked, and Von Miller knocked the ball out, and they scored a touchdown. Right before, it was third down, and right before that, the Panther defense, you know, started raising their arms to get the crowd to get into it. And the crowd, all that orange stood up, and they started to get loud. And you would have sworn you were at Mile High Stadium. You would have thought that was a Denver Bronco home game. I have never been at a Super Bowl, Neil, where they're one side of the field. But one side, when I talk about one side of the field, where one team had so much of an edge in, you know, just in noise, fan noise.
Yeah, I would agree that, especially in that first half, as you say, there was, you know, they were screaming. I mean, there were four ladies in the front row. I don't know how they were screaming their heads off. And I remember at one point we came back from a break, and the producer's talking in my ear, and he said, "We've got 10 seconds." To fill here, is there anything you can offer from down on the sidelines. And I said, the cameraman is with me. I said, get him to turn his camera into the front row, and then we'll just say, welcome back. This is what Cam's got to deal with. And we did, and the crowd was going nuts. They were screaming their heads off, and you think, well, multiply that by what? There must have been 40,000 Broncos fans in there, and it was a factor. What was it? 6 pre-snap penalties for the Panthers. Again, that you wonder how much of Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware off the edge. Yes, it's their outstanding skill, but as we saw in the AFC Championship game as well, those offensive linemen, when they can't hear Jeff, they're half a beat late, and sometimes that's deadly against that pair.
Yeah, and you can't change your plays. You can't get in and out of line calls. All of those things are critical factors. Before the game, even, when I was walking around the day before the game with my son, there was so much orange in San Francisco. I looked at Cole and I said, it looks like the first day of deer season back in Montana, you know, where you have to wear orange to go out in the woods. And I just said, this is unbelievable how many Denver Bronco fans are here.
What do you think? Was that geography, or is it just they're a more established franchise? I mean, Carolina are relatively new.
I think it's a little of both. Obviously, it's easier to get to San Francisco from Denver. It's much cheaper than flying all the way across the country. But I think the Broncos just have a bigger fan base. They're a more established franchise. This is Carolina. It's the record eighth trip to the Super Bowl by Denver, and it's only Carolina's second. So, again, I think that, you know, it was a factor of all those. But give the Bronco fans credit. I mean, really, you got to give, because they were the 12th man in that stadium.
Absolutely. I want to stick on the winning side of things, and then we'll move on to Cam Newton. Obviously, there's lots that's come out since Super Bowl 50 about Cam not going after that fumble, about Cam's post-match press conference. But let's just wrap up with the Denver Broncos side of things and talk about John Elway, the executive, Jeff, because John Elway, the player, won 2 Super Bowls at the end of his career. John Elway, the executive, had a coach in John Fox who'd won 4 straight division titles, but Elway makes the change last year. They've been through all sorts of turmoil this year, but he has built another Super Bowl champion. This time, you know, as a player, he's put himself, I guess, in that player-turned-executive role of like Ozzie Newsome was with the Ravens.
Yeah, and there are very few guys that have done that and done that successfully. And John, you know, left football and had a very, very successful car business in Denver, and then missed football and got back into, you know, Mr. Bowen brought him back into the front office in Denver, and he's risen up the ranks. And as Mr. Bowen sadly is, suffered from, John has taken a higher and higher, you know, he's a bigger voice in the whole deal, to the point now where he runs the entire franchise. Very, very, very controversial firing of John Fox last year. And interestingly enough, a couple times during this post-Super Bowl media bonanza, or whatever you want to call it, I've heard him make reference to that's why we made the change. You know, so obviously that relationship had soured at the end. He brought his old, you know, Denver training camp roommate and backup quarterback in to take over the team, and it's worked extremely well for him.
And now he's got some free agent decisions to make, because coming up, free agency starts on March the 9th. You can franchise tag on March the 1st, but they can only use the tag on one of them. They've got outside linebacker Von Miller. We've got defensive end Malik Jackson, linebacker Danny Trevathan, and of course, quarterback Brock Osweiler. And then factor into that, Peyton Manning is always demanding around $19 or $20 million per year. Archie Manning said, I think Peyton's done in Denver. He hasn't said that he thinks he's done full stop. But Elway's got some business to attend to in this offseason, Jeff, because Justin Houston signed a 6-year, $101 million contract last year. Von Miller's going to want at least that or more, and you can only use the tag on one of those guys.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting. This is the problem, or this is the good problem, of winning a Super Bowl. Everybody wants to get paid. Everybody wants to, you know, they want their piece. And, you know, you're Brock Osweiler. You've shown that they don't get to the Super Bowl without him. I truly believe that. His ability to play and keep, you know, win games for him was critical down the stretch. And so you're going to have to keep him, because you know Elway's not your future. You can't go. You've still got a tremendous roster. And so you've got to have a quarterback that can lead you. He's proven he can do it. Von Miller, as you said, is the best pass rusher in the league. You can't let him go. Trevathan's going to want more money. He led the team in tackles. You go on and on and on, and it's just the way it is. But, you know, they'll have to work hard inside the cap, restructuring deals, trying to figure out how they're going to go and try and keep that team together as best they possibly can. That's why it's so difficult in this age of free agency to have teams that win back-to-back Super Bowls.
All right then, Jeff, let's talk about Cam Newton, because obviously not the best day at the office for Cam on the field. And then we'll get to the fumble in a second. But first of all, a lot has been made about his press conference after the game. And I watched this press conference. We talked about it briefly on the bus on the way back from the stadium. We hadn't seen it. I watched it on Sunday night, and then I watched it again on Monday morning. The very first time I saw it, I was like, my initial thought was that I felt sorry for Cam. You could see the pain etched all over his face. He was hurting badly, and I guess you want your players who've just lost the Super Bowl to hurt badly. I get that. But then I looked at the more and more I watched, and he went through all of his yes-no answers at the press conference, and I was disappointed, Jeff. I've seen players front up after difficult losses. Blair Walsh this year with the missed field goal, he fronts up to the media. Luke Kuechly was the perfect example of a leader on Sunday night, talking to the media. Russell Wilson last year, after that last second interception, answered every question that he needed. Even you go back to Scott Norwood, I remember this, seeing the footage after that field goal that he missed for the Buffalo Bills. He answered every question. Rich Gannon did the same after five interceptions that he threw for the Oakland Raiders. For the Raiders against Tampa Bay. And I'm not buying this argument that Chris Harris being overheard from the next podium made Cam get up and walk out. He was going to get up and walk out no matter what. He wasn't playing ball with the media after the game.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. I agree with that. What you said about Chris Harris, absolutely true. I mean, that is just damage control that's being being scattershot out there by Carolina's people because of his, you know, really petulant performance after the game in the interview room. I understand how Ron tried to, tried to defend him in the media, right? Because your quarterback. You never want to, you know, point the finger at him publicly. I'm sure they're having conversations privately. And as a matter of fact, in the end, Ron said, "Did I wish he would have handled it different?" Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Don't give me this stuff about I'm a sore loser. That you're an immature kid is what you are when you behave that way.
Jeff, and I think he made it worse, Jeff, because I think he made it worse when he said, "I'm on record as being a sore loser. You show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser." This is not the time for Cam Newton to be quoting Vince Lombardi.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you go back, and again, do you really think that that's Cam Newton's words, or is that the words from the Carolina PR office?
Yeah.
They obviously saw the press conference. They saw how poorly he handled it. They saw what damage he did to his own image and to the Carolina Panther image by acting like a little kid who had his cookies taken away from him or got caught, you know, doing something he wasn't supposed to do. I'm sure those words came directly from he was coached to say that. When you say that, what you're saying to Luke Kuechly is now, think about it this way, who handled it well, what you're saying is it's less important to you, Luke, because you came in and you were a mature grown man and handled it well. So it's all about me. It's that same stuff you get with those kind of guys. It's all about me. Listen, if you want to go out there and you want to do the Superman thing and dab and all this, I'm all for it. I love it. But then you better be man enough when it doesn't go good to stand in there and take the heat. And he didn't. And again, organizationally, it's you wonder why guys get to be the face of the NFL. Mm. Russell Wilson will be the face of the NFL before Cam Newton will, because of these kinds of things.
Yeah, and I think, Jeff, you're absolutely right. It doesn't. If you front up to the media and you talk about things with class and you talk with dignity, it doesn't mean you care any less. And I don't think, you know, I don't think we should be saying, well, at least it shows he cares. You know, no, he had his hood up. he was being surly right from the start. It was the old Cam. And I went for, as soon as I landed yesterday in from the airport, I went for a coffee with my wife. And she said to me, she said, well, I felt sorry for him. You know how bad a loser George is, my son. And I said, yeah, but you know what? I always make him shake other people's hands and I make him act in a dignified. You can go home and cry your eyes out. You can go home and cry your eyes
George,
out.
George is 12 years old or 14 years old or whatever. Right. He's not a grown man. Right. You're a father. You're a grown man with a son of your own. Is that the way you want your son to see you?
Right.
I mean, let's stop all the nonsense about, you know, he's a great competitor. He's a great competitor, and he doesn't handle it well when things don't go his way. That's the truth, right? And again, I go back to that. If you make that statement that show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser, then you're calling Thomas Davis a loser, then you're calling Luke Kuechly a loser, you're calling those guys that stood up there at the microphone and handled it like a man. That's my number one. Now, second of all, let's talk about this. We saw it coming, Neil. You pointed it out the last media day with Carolina's bunch.
Oh, yeah.
He's up there. You could see it as he came in the room. You could feel the vibe as he came in the room. He didn't want to be there. Here's the reality. There's hundreds, maybe 1,000 media people there. They're media people. How many of them understand your situation? Very few. How many of them ever even put a jock strap on? Very few. How many of them know what it's like to play in a championship game? Very few. But that's your job. Your job is to take those questions. And yes, did they ask you a million times? Yes, that's the way it works. You know, and think about it. You mentioned it yourself. We needed to get a quote from Thomas Davis, right? So as you got our audio equipment set up, the person before you asked the very same question. Well, you've got to ask the question because that's your job. Right, and how did Thomas Davis handle it?
Yeah, he answered it again, fully. Yeah,
exactly. That's what I'm saying. So you gotta. It's all part of the job. It's not all the good things all the time, right? And that's where these guys that get enabled by the system and by the coaches that coach them and the media people that work with them, and again, if I was the owner of the Carolina Panthers, we would be having a private conversation. Because that is not the way you want your face of the franchise to react.
No, and Jeff, a lot of the reaction has been, well, you try losing a big game and then having a microphone shoved under your nose, but this is not a normal situation. Cam Newton has many, many benefits in his life from being an NFL quarterback, including a contract in excess of $100 million. You do not get treated the same way as somebody playing Sunday League football after they lose. You have to have what they call a fifth quarter for a quarterback. You play the four quarters of the game, and then another quarter is that you go and deal with the media. That is what you are paid to do.
That, Neil, you're exactly right. You're exactly right. And in this sport, now, in Premiership Soccer, it may not be that way. But in this sport, that's the way it is. And you sign up for it. When you say, I want to be a quarterback for a team in the National Football League, you immediately sign up for enhanced scrutiny, more questions, more dumb questions. You can call them dumb if you want. They are, a lot of them. But you have to, that's what you sign up for. If you don't like that, if that bothers you that much, then don't do it. And don't sign that $100 million contract, because it doesn't have a clause in it that says I don't have to answer dumb questions from the media. It doesn't have a clause in it that says after I lose the game, I can be a jerk. That's the reality of it. And again, those are strong words, but I feel strongly about it.
So Jeff, we talked about Cam. Obviously, that's a perception thing, but it does go towards the leadership side of his game as well. And especially if it looks like it's a selfish act. But let's talk about the fumble, the last fumble, which set up the touchdown, which basically iced the game. And I was reading on the Monday Morning Quarterback website this morning, Peter King's mailbag piece. And Jeff, there is a photo that Peter King wanted to highlight, which is Cam within 2 yards of the football and nobody else within at least 3-4 yards. Basically, if Cam dives on that ball when this photo was taken, the Panthers retain possession. Yes, they might have to punt, but they would have probably, the way Denver were playing, and they hadn't run the ball very well at that stage, Denver, they had a chance to probably punt it away, play defense, and get it back with still 3 minutes left because they had all three of their timeouts left. So Cam shies away from that. I think it's generally accepted that Cam shied away from diving on that fumble, which is bad enough. But this quote, Jeff, I'll read to you, has come from Cam since the Super Bowl, who says, "The way my leg was, it could have been contorted in a way to cause injury." Jeff, what does that say to Thomas Davis and Jared Allen? Did you see the pictures of Thomas Davis's arm?
I know exactly where you're going, and I agree with you 100%.
Thomas Davis's arm looked like a football. They showed a picture of it on Instagram. It looked so many stitches. Jared Allen is playing with a broken foot. I mean, and you didn't want to risk injury?
I just listened to an interview he did in their locker room as they're all leaving yesterday. Mm. And his response was, when they asked him about the fumble, was, "Whoa, wait a second now. You want to play? You're telling me I didn't go after the fumble. Let me just tell you that, let's play tit for tat, that I've seen numerous quarterbacks throw interceptions and not go after to try and tackle the guy. Are you kidding me? Yeah. Are you kidding me?" Right? And this is where I get angry with the media, because the media should have come right back at him.
Right.
Instead of being backed off on that comment. Hey, Thomas Davis is over there. He's got a 9-inch scar on his arm for taking I don't know how many screws to put his arm back together to go out and play an entire game to try and help us as a football team be a champion, and you back off of a fumble?
Yeah.
I mean, that one broke the code to me.
Yeah,
right?
And he admitted it, Jeff. He's admitted that, you know, I thought you could have thought, there's so much going on in the heat of battle. He could have said, "Well, I just froze for a second. I didn't think about it. I just couldn't get there quick enough." And probably half that media would have backed off and would have accepted that. But to actually say, "Well, I might have got hurt." Tom Brady didn't think about that when he's diving into the end zone, gets hit on the back of the neck in the divisional round against the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, time and time again, we see these players put their bodies on the line. And it's a weird statement, because we've seen Cam put his body on the line. We're not saying that he's not tough. I've seen him dive into the end zone for touchdowns. We've seen him somersault this year and land in the end zone for a touchdown. But it looks like he thought he was going to get injured if he did that play. And it was the biggest stage of all. And I tell you what, Jeff, as well, add this fumble to his post-game comments, and these things get magnified at a Super Bowl. These things are iconic. Iconic images come out of Super Bowls. They stick with you and they last.
And again, they don't come off easy. Because one thing that happens in pro football, it's easy to get a tag. And once you get a tag or a label, it's hard to get it off of you. Now, I will defend him on this point. In practice, and yeah, I'm talking about every practice, probably since he's been in college, anytime there's a fumble on the ground, they immediately stop the play. You don't go after balls on the ground
right.
in practice. You don't, because that's how guys get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So if he would have said, "Well, my immediate reaction was don't go after it because that's what happens in practice," I could get it. I would understand that, because that's been his conditioned response to the play. And then, oh my God, then he dives in after it. I would understand that. But when he says he backs away from it because he doesn't want to get hurt, that one would be hard for me to swallow.
Mm. He might have been better off giving a few yes and no answers, Jeff, after that.
It's just like Tlaib. And you know, if you want to talk about guys in the media, what a dumb thing for Tlaib to say. I on purpose went after Philly Brown's face mask.
Yeah.
I hope the league finds him. I really hope the league finds him for that, because there's no place for that in the game.
No,
right?
He could end up missing a few games to start next season, Jeff, for that.
Absolutely. But again, see, that's what I'm saying. You get, when you have guys like that and they're great players, you've got to understand, you got to constantly try and educate them. You got to constantly try and work with them. You got to constantly try and mitigate the fact that Aqib Tlaib in the first quarter of that game had 3 penalties.
Mm.
Three. Right? That's putting your team at risk. Those guys don't get that, because it's all about them.
Mm. It does make you wonder with, you know, it just makes me wonder going forward. I think Cam has got some growing up to do in terms of the media and how he deals with that. But more worrying would be That certainly looks like he was just playing for self-preservation and for himself at the end of that game. And that's got to stick a little bit for a Thomas Davis or a Jared Allen. You know, Jared Allen is as no-nonsense as they come. He is not going to be happy with that kind of reaction from his quarterback.
Well, again, same guy, same thing. Guy's playing with a broken foot.
Mm.
He's out there playing with a broken foot. Every play, pushing off. That's the hardest thing. He's pushing off his foot to try and get to the passer. He's pushing off his foot to try and get to the running back. And he's making plays, and he's playing in pain, in huge pain. It's got to be awful, right? A broken bone in your foot, imagine us. Mm. We get a blister, and we can't walk down the street. That guy's got a broken bone in his foot, and he's pushing off in the Super Bowl game so that to help his team win the game. Again, these are all the reasons why it's so tough to keep a team together and to keep a team focused and going in one direction. And, you know, again, I'm sure there's going to be some all out in that locker room from this. And Cam's going to have to work to get the respect of his team and those guys back, because this isn't going away. It's going to be played over and over and over and over again through the offseason. That's the thing about the media today. You're just going to continually have it in your face, until he grows up, handles it like a man, and then rectifies the situation with his actions.
Yeah, and that's the only way he can do it, is with his actions, because I had this question from Michael Talbot, who says, Cam's poor performance and emotional reactions that show a permanent flaw in his game, was it just a bad day? So all of this stuff could be Cam's inability to deal with a bad day on the biggest stage of all, and again, that comes to maturity, or it could be a long-term problem in terms of leadership. The only way we're going to find out, Jeff, is for him to go out and lead from the front and put it on the line week in and week out. It's a show me thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and again, what's so damning about this, and so, as you mentioned, this puts, if you watch the kid play, right, there's never been a sign of him backing off of a hit or not, you know, not competing or any of that other stuff.
No.
But he did it. He chose to do it in the biggest game of his life. And so that's now on him. I guess the one positive of it is he did tell the truth. He owned up to the fact that he didn't want to get hurt. And, but now, again, you're going to have to deal with fallout of that. I thought Tony Dungy called it perfect. He said, the kid, that's just a sign of the kid's immaturity. And he is an immature kid. He's come a long way. He's done some good things. You told me the story about how they've gone through and really worked on his interview skills.
Mm.
But he's still got a long ways to go.
Yep, you have to deal with the but he's come a long way this year, because they were 17-1 until Sunday night. You've got to take the rough with the smooth.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Well, we are out of time for this week. And next week, Jeff, we're not going to record a podcast. I don't know why I said that with such excitement in my voice. I think it's because I'm off to the French Alps for a little skiing.
You'll be over there shushing down the slopes.
Yeah, just for a day, and then they'll be flying me back.
The Reynolds plan.
They'll be flying me back a day later. So we'll record a week commencing.
make sure you don't come back on medevac.
No, I'll be good. I'll be good. I'll be taking it easier. We'll be back week commencing February the 22nd. And Jeff, we'll start our state of the franchise stuff.
Awesome. Who are we going to start with?
The first three teams picking in the draft. So Tennessee, Cleveland, and San Diego. Nick Pike's just mouthed San Diego. Save me at the last second, like a good receiver on third down, coming up big for his quarterback. So we're going to start with Tennessee, Cleveland, and San Diego. Sound good, Jeff?
Lots to talk about with those three franchises. Lots to get right with those three franchises.
Absolutely. So we'll be back week commencing February the 22nd. Again, thanks for all of you who downloaded all of our podcasts and video podcasts through Super Bowl week. It was much appreciated. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with NFL UK and SkySports.com. Take them home, Coach.
Aloha.